Straits brings legal and business insights at the intersection of the shipping and energy sectors. This podcast series offers trends, developments, challenges, and topics of interest from Reed Smith litigation, regulatory, and finance lawyers across our network of global offices. If you have any questions about the topics discussed on this podcast, please do contact our speakers.
Welcome, my name's Julie Vaughan, Environmental Counsel in the London office of Reed Smith, and I'm here with my colleague Nick Walker, Environmental Partner in our Paris office, to talk about the new EU deforestation regulation. The objective of the regulation is to ensure that products used by businesses in the EU or exported from the EU don't add to deforestation around the world. It does this by requiring that people importing or supplying certain commodities or products made from them on the EU market or exporting them to non-EU countries undertake a process of due diligence. So this involves investigating the risk that their production has contributed to turning forests into agricultural land or converting natural forests into plantations or shrubland. Plantations here means intensively managed forest with only one or two tree species that have been planted at the same time that are evenly spaced out. So it includes, amongst other things, oil palm plantations, as well as forest planted to supply demand for biomass pellets, for example. Businesses throughout the relevant supply chains are going to need detailed procedures in place, we think, to comply with the new regime. And they must make sure those are then implemented on an ongoing basis into the future. So whilst only EU-based operators and traders are bound by the new rules, there will be an impact on overseas producers and suppliers as EU companies reevaluate whether their current overseas providers are able to provide sufficient assurances to enable them to comply with the EU regime. Sanctions for non-compliance with the regime do include hefty fines based on aggregate EU turnover, as well as confiscation of products, naming and shaming, and being shut out of trading for up to a year. Nick, why don't you give us an idea of the main features of the EU regulation before we come back at the end to discuss what companies likely to be affected can be doing now to prepare themselves.
Sure, Julie. Thanks and hello to everybody. So basically, it's a very comprehensive regime that gives wide powers to member states and their regulators. And the regulation actually already envisages that in the future, it could be extended to go beyond just deforestation and capture other types of harm to woodland and natural ecosystems. So it's an evolving picture. And so it's very, very important for anybody trading into or sourcing natural products into the EU market to be familiar with the new regulation. So basically, larger operators and traders will be required to comply with the new regime within 18 months of it coming into force. And smaller size entities will have a little bit of extra time. They'll have an extra 6 months, and some of the obligations won't apply to them or will be more lenient for them. So basically, the regulation applies to seven different types of commodities and a list of particular categories of products made from those commodities. That core seven commodities list is cocoa, rubber, soy, coffee, wood, which includes paper, cattle, which includes meat of beef cattle and products made from animal skins, and oil palm. And it's important to bear in mind that each one of those categories covers products made or produced with those commodities. So the scope of products involved is really massive. So the regulation will create obligations on two different types of businesses within the EU. One category of businesses called operators, who are basically companies who are the first entity to make available on the EU market the product. So whether that's an EU-based manufacturer of products made with those commodities or an importer into the EU of those commodities. And the second category of businesses in scope are traders. And traders are businesses that are basically in the same supply chain as an operator, but who offer the product for further distribution or consumption or use. So basically, an operator is the manufacturer or the first introducer into the market, and a trader is an onward distributor within the EU. And the essential principle underpinning the regulation is that none of the commodities or products in scope are allowed to be imported or supplied within the EU or exported from the EU unless they are deforestation-free legally made in the country of production and covered by a specific new due diligence statement that will go into a new information system set up by the Commission. And that due diligence statement has to contain certain prescribed information and be accompanied by a formal declaration that the operator has exercised due diligence and concluded that there is either no deforestation risk affecting those products at all, or only a negligible risk. And within the regulation, negligible risk is defined to basically mean that the operators conducted a full assessment and on the basis of both product-specific and general information, after all appropriate mitigation measures, that there is no cause for concern that that product is either not deforestation-free or produced in breach of local laws. So basically, the product has to either be zero deforestation risk or extremely low risk.
The UK is actually also preparing a deforestation DD regime as well, which I just thought I'd briefly mention. The UK regulations are slightly different. They're going to target the use of what we call forest risk commodities by companies carrying on business in the UK who have over a certain threshold of turnover, but that figure is yet to be worked through. And it won't actually cover trading or exports, it's just use. So the UK regime, which is just at the proposal stage, and the government is expected to come out with some regulations, some draft regulations soon, it will only be concerned, it'll be concerned with not turning forests into agricultural land, but not actually concerned with degradation of natural forests. So it's got a slightly different focus from the EU regulation that we're going through today. And there's, under the UK regime, there's a proposed exemption for the use of only small amounts of products, but that's not something that we see in the EU regulation. And crucially, the UK is only seeking to make sure that commodities were legally obtained in the source country. And this means that if the bar in that country where they were produced is set quite low, then the UK rules don't require a top-up to an international best practice standard. The relevant local laws in scope for the UK regulations are probably going to be just those governing land use, ownership and deforestation. In contrast, the local laws that need to be complied with for the EU's deforestation regulation are far wider. And there is no exemption, as I said, for small quantities, although quantity can be taken into account. It should be taken into account in the DD process itself. In addition to laws on land use, forest management and conservation and environmental protection, under the EU regulation, the relevant laws include, firstly, labour rights, human rights, requirements for prior informed consent of any local indigenous peoples in the place of production, and even things such as tax, anti-corruption, trade and laws on customs regulation. And secondly, it's also wide enough to take into account third-party rights, which might, for example, mean rights in contracts. So, Nick, what about the other key aspects of the EU regime, that commodities and products must be deforestation-free?
Yeah, so deforestation-free has a particular meaning under the regulation that's actually a little complex. Basically, deforestation-free means that the products covered by the regulation either contain or were made only using commodities, so cocoa, soy, etc., that were produced on land that was not subject to deforestation after the 31st of December 2020. So there's a retrospective element to the assessment that's going to come on board. So for example, if we're talking about cattle products, that means that the cattle or the animals weren't fed with commodities, say soybeans, that were produced on land that was subject to deforestation after the 31st of December 2020. Same for, say, wood or wooden paper products. That means that the underlying wood, you know, was harvested without causing deforestation after 2020.
Then there's also a whole system of checks which the appointed member state competent authority is required to undertake on operators and traders in their country. Can you explain that, Nick?
So competent authorities, which, you know, basically means local regulators in EU jurisdictions, must perform a certain minimum percentage of checks every year on operators, and that minimum depends on whether the products come from countries which the EU Commission has decided are either high standard or low risk jurisdictions in terms of deforestation. So for higher risk countries, local regulators will have to check at least 9% of EU-based operators in their country and at least 9% of their relevant products. For standard risk countries, that goes down to 3%, and there's no particular target for quantity of products. And for countries that have been determined to be a low-risk area for deforestation, the minimum percentage drops to 1%. So there's kind of a phased approach to enforcement. Then the regulator has to state in its annual plan which operators and traders are going to be checked in the coming year. But that doesn't mean that operators will necessarily have warning of exactly when in the year that they're going to be audited, and they won't necessarily know what that audit will entail. So they won't know, for example, whether they're going to have a site visit or whether, you know, to what extent the regulator is going to go into the chain of due diligence. We think that most checks are likely to be done remotely or by document submission, just given the resources available to regulators. But theoretically, regulators also have the power to examine goods, conduct tests in certified laboratories, and they can even theoretically visit the country of production and make inquiries on site if the overseas jurisdiction allows that. And so if a regulator does identify non-compliant products on the market, the operator or trader will basically be required to take steps, corrective action, within a time period that the regulator will determine. And that action, you know, will include things like bringing themselves back into compliance or preventing the sale or export of the product that's not compliant. Sometimes perhaps it might involve immediate recall or withdrawal of the product from sale. And it can also extend to requirements to either donate or dispose of non-compliant products. The operator can also be asked to fund or reimburse the competent authority's investigation costs, so costs of testing and audit. Now, if operators and traders don't comply with those orders, the regulator can step in and take steps to ensure compliance themselves. And what that entails will depend a little bit on what your local law provides in terms of powers for those regulators, but relatively classically can involve seizure at the customs border and other orders to withdraw the product from sale. And authorities also have temporary seizure and suspension of sale powers if they suspect non-compliance, to give them time to investigate. And if they choose to do so, they can also make submissions into the information system, which will alert other member states and customs authorities to potential non-compliance.
So as you can see, it's a really quite comprehensive system. And so is the range of penalties that can be imposed. And those can include fines. These have got to be proportionate to the environmental damage that's been caused and to the value of the products as well. And they've got to be set at a level, though, that will, as a minimum, deprive the operator of the benefit that they've got from not complying. And this is the point to note. Fines have got to be at least 4% of the operator's total annual aggregated turnover in the EU for the preceding financial year. So they could really be quite substantial. And that can go up if somebody is a repeat offender. And there are other sanctions as well that are available in the regulator's toolkit here. They can confiscate goods or the revenues that an operator's got from selling them on. The operator can be disqualified for up to a year from entering into public procurement processes and might be prevented from being awarded concessions or government grants. In serious cases, the operator can also be temporarily banned from supplying or exporting the product. So that's a horror story on the fines there and the sanctions available. But Nick, shall we bring it back to consider what businesses need to do to stay out of the sin bin?
Yeah, so effectively what businesses need to do is that for each product they offer to the EU market or export from the EU market, they need to comply a due diligence statement and submit that statement into the new information system, along with a formal declaration that certifies that they've undertaken due diligence on the product chain and that they haven't identified, well, they've either identified no deforestation risk or no more than a negligible deforestation risk. The system will then generate a reference number that the trader or the operator must pass on to its customers, as part of the sort of pack of information necessary to demonstrate that due diligence was performed and that no risk was found.
Yeah, so that begs the question, what goes into this due diligence statement?
So that's covered in Annex 2 to the regulation, alongside certain basic information about the product and the operator. The statement needs to identify, and this is the kicker, the precise plots of land in the country of production where that commodity grew or was produced, or in the case of animals, was kept. Now, the operator can cross-refer to other due diligence statements in the system, and there's a certain amount of rationalization that's possible or helpful, but basically that doesn't remove the underlying responsibility of an operator to submit a new statement undertaking its own checks for all the products that it has in the system.
And just to add, Nick, that the regulation doesn't seek to impose any obligations on producers or suppliers that are based outside of the EU territory, although there certainly could be some commercial implications for them. But instead, it's the EU importer who's going to use the product or sell it on to others in the EU or re-export it from the EU that will need to do the DD and submit the statement. Operators and traders will also be able to appoint an agent, though, to act as an authorised representative, and the representative can then make filings on their behalf. In that case, they'll need an appointment document that they can show to the authorities if they ask. And there are some rules about that, actually, just to bear in mind if that's something you're planning to do, because there are rules about what languages you have to have that translated into. But, Nick, sorry, I think I interrupted you.
No, so there are... We're talking about the due diligence statement and what goes into it. So basically, there are requirements about how operators and traders must perform their due diligence, which involves obligations about how they collect the data necessary for their due diligence, how they do conduct their risk assessment, and then what steps they take to mitigate the risk of their products being involved in deforestation. So the first step is that the operator has to sort of collect and organize all the information and supporting evidence that they need to describe the product and where it's come from. And so there are both sort of positive and negative obligations involved in that. So if the operator has any evidence that the product is involved in deforestation or forest degradation, the commodity has to be automatically disqualified. So any positive evidence, you're out. But more than that, an operator has an obligation to go and find information that actively demonstrates that the product is deforestation-free. So it's not just a presumption, if I can't find anything, it's deforestation-free. You have to prove that the product is deforestation-free. And that evidence that you go and collect has to be adequately conclusive and verifiable by third parties like a regulator. And in addition to evidence about the product itself being deforestation-free, the operator also needs to find evidence that the product was produced in compliance with local law and that the commodity was produced on land where it was authorized. So, for example, that might involve looking at local law, where local law gives rights to certain Indigenous peoples about the control and management of land. You know, was a necessary consent obtained prior to producing the product? And again, that evidence has to be sufficiently conclusive and sufficiently verifiable by a third party. So there's a very comprehensive data collection exercise that's the first step. And once the operator has all the data, they have to then analyze the evidence and use it to conduct a risk assessment. And the regulation sets out various criteria that an operator has to use. And that includes assessing whether Indigenous people have been consulted, how they substantiate claims about where products have been grown or kept. And the real difficulty, I think, practically for a lot of operators is going to be linking back their products to specific particular plots of land with defined geographical coordinates where there might be a very complex supply chain before the product comes to an operator in the EU. And they're going to have to wrestle with very complex factors in various local jurisdictions across the world, whether that's levels of law enforcement, corruption, maybe human rights violations, maybe it's an area where there's armed conflict, maybe there are economic sanctions in place, and the operator has to sort of compute all of that in their risk assessment.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a really complex and challenging exercise. And it's going to need to be done quite thoroughly and be well documented along the way. The assessment report needs to show precisely how the information gathered has actually been assessed as well. So it's really important to document the process. Operators, they can use information that's been supplied by third-party certification schemes that might be out there, but it doesn't actually replace the need for them to undertake the risk analysis. So you can supply it as part of your information pack alongside the due diligence certificate, but it doesn't replace the need to go through the motions of that due diligence assessment. There's a slight exception to that, and that's in relation to wood products that were covered by a licence issued under the existing EU flegged scheme for timber. And if you've got one of those, then your timber is deemed to have been produced in compliance with local law, but it's still got to get over the deforestation-free hurdle. So it sort of helps you part of the way. Finally, if the level of risk comes out above negligible on the assessment, the operator then has to look at what it can do to mitigate that risk. And that means it might need to ask for more information. It might need to go out and carry out an independent survey or audit. Or the operator could provide some form of actual support to the producers to enable them to then produce the goods in a way that is deforestation free. And I think that's an interesting feature because it's actually incentivizing people to collaborate with people lower down the supply chain to actually resolve these issues at source. At the risk assessment, it's not sufficient to just have done one once and then sort of carry on trading for the next 10 years. The risk assessment actually has to be refreshed every year as well. And it's not even all plain sailing after you've done your DD and submitted your DD statement, because if an operator or trader then receives information that the product isn't deforestation free and compliant after all, then they are still under a duty to go back and inform the competent authority and also inform any traders that they've supplied the product to. Now, if you supply a lot of people, that could be quite a big exercise in its own right.
Exactly. And even then, even once you've got your mitigation measures in place, there's also requirements under the regulation to structure your internal governance and policy. So those requirements basically mean that operators have to have sort of adequate and proportional policies and controls and procedures in place within their own businesses. And that covers things like risk management, reporting, record keeping, compliance functions within the business. And depending on the size of the operator, those requirements differ. So, you know, larger operators have to sort of appoint a compliance officer at management level and establish an independent audit function for deforestation purposes to check the system that they have in place. The company's decisions on risk management procedures for deforestation and their kind of responses and measures all have to be adequately documented and reviewed, again, annually. Regulators can ask to see copies of those procedures and decisions. And so basically, operators have to be in a position not just to have performed the due diligence for their various products and submitted it to the system, updated, done their risk mitigation. They also have to be able to show a regulator how internally within the business they come to those decisions and those policies. So there has to be a framework in place inside your business showing how due diligence is conducted. And again, that has to be reviewed annually. And the final requirement in terms of management internally to the businesses is that businesses have to produce a report on their deforestation due diligence system, which has to be made available widely and as a minimum published on their business website. And so that basically is a public report that explains how an operator has met their new obligations under the deforestation package.
And of course, there are some other pieces of legislation out there under discussion, which will also impact supply chains and require due diligence by businesses. But thankfully, I see that if the operators, for the purposes of the deforestation regulation, are subject to those, then they don't have to repeat the exercise. They can effectively fold their deforestation due diligence report into reports that they have to produce under other EU regimes that require them to undertake due diligence in the business. So that should avoid some duplication of effort in the future. And also the regulation helpfully has provided for a simplified DD procedure for products from low-risk countries. And that's available provided the operator has documentary evidence to show that the risk of the regulation being circumvented due to complexities in the supply chain, or of the products having been mixed together with those from higher risk or just unknown countries, is negligible. However, if that's later contradicted because new information comes along to show actually they were risk or they were mixed up with products from a high risk jurisdiction, the operator does then have to go back and do the full exercise.
Exactly. So even benefiting from some of the more lenient provisions in itself involves a certain amount of internal assessment by the business to prove that they can benefit from those exceptions. So that's basically how the new scheme works. We don't have the final published text in the official journal, but we certainly expect no more than very, very minor drafting changes than what's been already adopted by both the council and the parliament. So now I think it's time to think about what can businesses do as of now to start preparing for the incoming obligations, because frankly, 18 months or 2 years is a very small window when we're talking about the complexity of some of these new obligations. But I guess the good news is there is a lot that businesses can be doing as of now. A very simple first step is to get familiar with the list of in-scope commodities and products in Appendix 1 and consider whether you make or put on the market or sell on the market or export from the EU any of those products, bearing in mind, again, that it's not just 7 products, it's 7 categories of commodity with multiple products in scope. So, for example, again, wood also covers paper products, cardboard, all sorts of other packaging. And once you know you have products in scope, you know, a sensible next step is to look at your existing practices and procedures and see whether, you know, determine how far apart, how big a gap there might be between what you're already doing in terms of deforestation due diligence and what's going to be required in the future. Some companies will already have been under the former EU timber regulation, so they may already have some procedures in place. Once you've identified how far away, what's the compliance gap, you know, it might be time to think about drafting some of those internal policies, structuring yourself internally, thinking about what will be your business's methodology and approach to risk assessment and start drawing up those internal documents. Decide whether you're going to do that process yourself or you're going to go to market and use one of a service provider who would be an authorized representative on your behalf. And if you're going to go with a third party, think about their terms of appointment and the new requirements under the regulation for that. Even if your due diligence obligation hasn't started, you can get ahead by thinking about templates, by thinking about pro forma questions to suppliers, getting in contact with your suppliers. And once you've got those suppliers organized and in scope, start talking to them about what land they're using. How do you identify the land that your suppliers and their suppliers are using to produce these products? Where are they procured from? Do we know? Can we be specific to a plot of land or is it just a region? And what is the chance that the products have been mixed from multiple locations or even multiple countries via various suppliers? And so once you then have the picture of all the places geographically where your product might ultimately be sourced from, you know, what are the laws in those countries? Undertake an audit of what the legal regime in all of those various places might require in terms of indigenous land use consent or leasing or compliance with local law. Think about, you know, Julie spoke about third-party schemes. You know, where can you find credible information in each of those places about levels of deforestation or degradation risk? And then once you've done all of that, you can come and talk to lawyers and you can think about your contracts. What are your agreements in place with your suppliers currently? Do you need to insert provisions into those contracts that require the passing on of information, the passing down of information? Do you want to shift some of those very onerous obligations down to suppliers to help you comply? And how do they and how frequently do they have to pass information back to you? So there's a lot you can be working on.
There certainly is. What I'd like to encourage people to do is to reach out to us if you'd like to talk any of that through. if you'd find that helpful. And, you know, generally we're here to help. So do get in touch with either Nick or myself if you'd like to help work out how that's going to affect your organisation and start to get prepared. But mostly, many thanks for listening to us today, and we hope to speak to you again soon.
Trading Straits is a Reed Smith production. Our producer is Ali McArdle. For more information about Reed Smith's energy and natural resources or transportation practices, please email tradingstraits@reedsmith.com. You can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Google, Stitcher, and reedsmith.com, and our social media accounts at reedsmithllp on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.
This podcast is provided for educational purposes. It does not constitute legal advice and is not intended to establish an attorney-client relationship, nor is it intended to suggest or establish standards of care applicable to particular lawyers in any given situation. Prior results do not guarantee a similar outcome. Any views, opinions, or comments made by any external guest speaker are not to be attributed to Reed Smith LLP or its individual lawyers. All rights reserved.